Hey everyone, my name's Scott and I'm one of the pastors here at Grace. It's so awesome for you all to be tuning in wherever you're at. However you got here, whether you're local to Erie or watching in Omaha, Nebraska, or halfway around the globe, you must hear this. Your tuning in right now is no accident. And so before you turn the channel or close the link, would you just hang out for a couple minutes? Our new series could be the exact thing you have been searching for. And so I'm going to start us off with a question. What words would you use to describe a successful relationship? Now, before you go straight to the romantic kind, let me be clear. The series is not about those. Are they included? Yeah. But what this series is referring to is our relationships with friends, relationships we have with family, with neighbors, with our coworkers, pretty much anyone who you have an interpersonal connection to in one way or another. So now that we're all on the same page, what words would you use to describe those rich and deep successful relationships? I'm sure words like communication, trust, grace, love, kindness probably would come to mind. Now, what words would you use to describe those relationships that didn't go so well? You know, those ones left in a heap of ashes under the rug, or the pile in the corner littered with broken shards and soul-piercing shrapnel, the ones with, well, you get the picture. Most likely, those words are the polar opposites of the ones used to describe the successful kind. I think it's safe to say that we've had plenty of both of those in our lives. If we were to take the time, I'm sure faces and names would come flooding forward. And along with it, people who you've celebrated with and cried with, who understand you so much that they can complete your sentences for you, who know your deepest secrets, fears, and dreams. But there are also those who took a piece of you with them, ones whose names are on some of the bricks of the walls that protect your heart now. That friend or family member whose scar is seen every time you look in the mirror. And most often we choose one of two options. Bury the hurt and the disappointment by filling our lives with distractions or hitting the pause button and taking the time to reflect. And I think it's safe to say we've had a bit more time on our hands lately. So much of our once normal has been given the big old pause button. And I think it has given us all an opportunity to be reminded that we as human beings are hardwired for connection with one another. Because if you're like me, maybe you've come to realize during our disconnected, stay-at-home, distance reality that we just weren't made to live this way. And that maybe, just maybe, you were a bit too focused on filling up your day with tasks and to-dos, starving for the times of connection, but too busy to do anything of substance about it. And I think what we have had a chance to discover through all of this is that relationships nourish us in ways nothing else can. And so we are going to have that chance over the course of this month, a chance to be reminded that we were created for relationship with one another and, most importantly, with the Creator of all things. How cool is that? That the Creator, desiring a relationship with His created. And God demonstrates that through the many stories of relationships contained in the Bible. And I love it that we can enter into a story whenever we want, to observe and listen, to ask the question of, who am I in this story? And so we're going to do just that. We are going to enter into four separate storied relationships and ask the question of, who am I in this story and what can I learn from them? And this is something Jesus himself did often in the parables that he told. And listen, at some point you may gravitate to one character over the other, but make no mistake, there is so much to take away and apply no matter who you identify with. And so we're going to turn to our story today, located in Exodus 18. And get a chance to sit in on a reunion between Moses and his father-in-law, Jethro. I want you to picture this story from different camera angles and perspectives as we go through it. Ask God to reveal lessons to be taken from the perspective of Moses. Takeaways from the way Jethro observes, interacts, and engages with Moses. In the wide-angle lens of the entire scene and unspoken exchanges they have with one another. Okay, are you ready? Here we go. Exodus 18, starting in verse 5. It reads this. Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, came with his sons and his wife to Moses in the wilderness where he was encamped at the mountain of God. And when he sent word to Moses, I, your father-in-law, Jethro, am coming to you with your wife and her two sons with her. Moses went out to meet his father-in-law and bowed down and kissed him. And they asked each other of their welfare and went in to the tent. All right, now stop right there. Why does Moses respond like that? I mean, listen, I love my father-in-law, but when he comes to the house, the last thing you're going to see me doing is running out, arms open, ready to embrace him, and then kissing his feet. I mean, I love the man and all, but I've seen those suckers. Lips to toes is not my next move. So what gives? To understand Moses' response, it's important to learn a bit more about these two and who they were before this moment. And it starts in Exodus 1. So let me give you a quick recap. Born into an Israelite slave family in Egypt, Moses' life is threatened when Pharaoh orders all Hebrew infants to be drowned in the Nile. His mother hides him for 3 months, but eventually sets him adrift in a basket. He's rescued by Pharaoh's daughter, who adopts him into this Egyptian royalty. Now fast forward 40 years in, Moses is 40 years old, and one day is filled with rage because he's witnessing this act of violence toward one of his enslaved countrymen. So he ends up killing this Egyptian taskmaster and buries his body in the sand. The next day, realizing that Pharaoh learns of his deeds, flees to the wilderness and decides to hide in exile. While there, Moses one day sees 7 daughters with a flock of sheep who begin to get pestered by a group of male shepherds over water. Moses steps in and intervenes, calls out the injustice, sends the men packing, draws water for the daughters' flock, and then sends them on their way. Now guess whose daughters they were? A guy by the name of Jethro. Jethro, in hearing all of that's transpired, has his daughters go and track Moses down to bring him back to his home and share in a meal together. Not only does he feed him, but he also gives his daughter Zipporah for a wife. I mean, talk about the ultimate 2-for-1 deal. All right, so now that we've got a little bit of more context, let's continue reading, start picking back up in verse 8. Then Moses told his father-in-law all that the Lord had done to Pharaoh and to the Egyptians for Israel's sake, all the hardships that had come upon them in the way, and how the Lord had delivered them. And Jethro rejoiced for all good that the Lord had done to Israel, in that he had delivered them out of the hands of the Egyptians. Jethro said, "Blessed be the Lord who has delivered you out of the hand of the Egyptians and out of the hand of Pharaoh, and has delivered the people from under the hand of the Egyptians. Now I know that the Lord is greater than all gods, because in this affair they dealt arrogantly with the people." And Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, brought a burnt offering and sacrifice to the God, and Aaron came with all the elders of Israel to eat bread with Moses' father-in-law before God. The next day, Moses sat to judge the people, and the people stood around Moses from morning till evening. When Moses' father-in-law saw all that he was doing for the people, he said, "What is this that you are doing for the people? Why do you sit alone and all the people stand around you from morning till evening?" And Moses said to his father-in-law, "Because the people come to me to inquire of God. When they have a dispute, they come to me and I decide between one person and another, and I make them know the statutes of God and his laws." Moses' father-in-law said to him, "What you are doing is not good. You and the people with you will certainly wear yourselves out, for the thing is too heavy for you. You are not able to do it alone. Now obey my voice. I will give you advice, and God be with you. You shall represent the people before God and bring their cases to God, and you shall warn them about the statutes and the laws, and make them know the way in which they must walk and what they must do. Moreover, look for able men from all the people, men who fear God, who are trustworthy and hate a bribe, and place such men over the people as chief priests, as chiefs of thousands, of hundreds, of fifties, and of tens. And then let them judge the people at all times. Every great matter they shall bring to you, but any small matter they shall decide themselves. So it will be easy for you, and they will bear the burden with you. If you do this, God will direct you. You will be able to endure, and all this people also will go to their place in peace." So Moses listened to the voice of his father-in-law and did all that he said. For those who are familiar with this passage, you know that it is often used as an example of how good leaders delegate. Jethro gives Moses some advice about all that he's doing and says, "Dude, you're doing it all and you're gonna burn yourself out. You're a living example of a jack of all trades and a master of none." I mean, Jethro's not wrong. But have you ever paused after you read Moses' response to Jethro's advice with a, "Are you out of your mind?" Look again at verse 24. It says, "Moses listened to the voice of his father-in-law and did all that he said." Listen, I'm not downplaying Jethro's advice, but this is Moses. He's no longer shepherd of Jethro's flock. He is leader of all of Israel. He has the ear of God, and God's been doing some pretty cool stuff through Moses. I mean, we've got staff into snake, water from a rock, splitting seas into two. Why, then, would he listen to every piece of advice from Jethro? I mean, think about it. When's the last time you took every piece of advice someone gave you and implemented all of it? No one just takes a piece of advice and does everything they suggest unless they have a deep relational connection with them, a relational connection cultivated over time that's built on the cornerstone of trust and sealed tight with the mortar of respect. That's exactly what we must recognize here. This entire reunion exchange is backdropped by time spent in building connection. And isn't that what we are craving right now? Connection? To be reunited once again, to embrace like Moses and Jethro did, to have a big meal together and celebrate together, laugh together so hard that our sides are so sore the next morning. I mean, even saying that, a bubbling of emotions begins to rise up from deep within me, and faces of people I long to reconnect with are coming flooding forward. And I don't think any of us realized how much we needed connection with others until it was taken away. And so we're going to go there today and tug on the heartstrings a bit, and maybe in the process you'll see where you need a good tuning to be done. A relationship that quite requires maybe a bit more investing into, or a friendship that has grown distant as the result of time gone by, or a void in your life that up until now has never been able to be filled. So let's enter back into this story and allow the reunion between Moses and Jethro to bring to light three insights on cultivating connection. And the first is this: souls need time to pause and connect. Up to this point before COVID, do you want to know the number one thing people complained about not having enough of? Time. I mean, how many of us constantly found ourselves saying, I just don't have enough time. There's just not enough time in the day. Or how often would you find yourself saying, I would love to spend more time with my friends, but I'm just too busy, man. I love the response Rick Warren gives to people when he hears that. He simply says this: if you're too busy to have some deep relationships with people, you're too busy. And listen, if you still feel yourself saying that right now, this message is meant for you. Because if I have learned anything during this COVID time, there was a ton of temporary things I was putting way too much of my time into. That I was essentially caught up in this rush of life. I mean, I actually took pride in color coding my calendar with all the stuff that I had going on. Meetings, appointments, lunches, more meetings, personal time with God, kids' activities, dinners, committee work. It was this amazing canvas of awesome. And if I'm being honest, exhaustion. It was a hub of rushed and flushed. And that is not what I see here with the reunion of Moses and Jethro. Remember, Moses is the leader of all of Israel, and as we just read, is a pretty busy guy from morning till evening. I mean, he's like the Swiss Army knife of leaders. Take a look at his day, for crying out loud. 8 a.m. to 10 a.m., a class on laws and decrees of God. 10 a.m. to noon, three court cases to oversee as judge. He hurries up and eats lunch on the go as he heads over to his meeting with the VPs of Israel to talk leadership, strategy, and distribution of goods and services from 12:30 to 2:30. Then back over for an afternoon lecture from 3 to 5 on rules of the sacrifice, a quick dinner, and then over to the tent to meet with God for however long God wants to meet, because we all know God doesn't wear a watch. Mr. One day is as 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is as one day. And yet, in spite of all of that, Moses stops everything. This is where taking the time to put yourself into the story is so helpful. I put myself in Moses' shoes right here, and I ask, why? Why would Moses stop everything he's got going on, literally putting the entire production line of Israelite activity on halt? It's because he knew souls need time to pause and connect. Look at the second sentence of verse 7. And they asked each other of their welfare and went into the tent. Would you underline "and went into the tent" and in the margin write "embrace the unrushed"? They took time to focus on relationship. They connected, they shared, they processed, they sacrificed together. They tasted the sweetness of soul-satisfying relationship. And here's the convicting thing I feel when I read that. My sentence would have sounded more like, and they asked each other of their welfare and went on about their day. Right? I mean, it's the classic example of making small talk. How you doing? What's new? How's the wife and kids? Talk for about 10 to 15 minutes and then move on with the day. But not these two. You see, they resisted the rush because they knew rushing is for amateurs. You know, I love the way Lisa Turkhurst puts it. She says, making time and taking time to connect, to create space for conversation is vital. You see, conversational threads are what make up the fabric of relationships. And the fabric of many of my relationships, to be honest with you, have snags and pulls, a hot mess from the pace of life. Why? Because to be honest, I've taken my relationships for granted. What about you? I mean, think back for a second of what your calendar looked like before all of this. Was it filled with achievement, advancement, and activity? I mean, can we just call out the truth that our relationships were suffering mightily? And I love what Moses is demonstrating here. Moses recognizes the gift of simply being present and pausing to catch up. You see, investing in simply being present and connecting has a much longer payout than chasing after achievement. Achievement leaves you empty. Being leaves your life enriched. And you know where to look to find out what you're investing all your time in? Your calendar. You see, because your calendar will always reflect your investments. And so where can you be like Moses and give your soul time to pause and connect? You see, it's time to reclaim space for what matters most. Never before has there been more of a need to connect with God. Make it a non-negotiable then. Open up that Bible or that app and get connected to your Heavenly Father. We have so many resources and ways for you to do that. That is just a click away. Reclaim that space. Or call up a friend during your lunch hour and connect over a video chat. And don't use the excuse of how awkward it would be to have them watch you and eat and talk. I mean, isn't that what you do when you meet for lunch somewhere anyway? I mean, large-scale events have been canceled, vacations have been postponed, organized sports on hold. Reclaim that space. Create a list of things you want to do. Capture the moment. Take a picture. Write it down in a journal. Make it a positive memory and be intentional with someone. Working parents, schedule in a half-hour lunch video call with your kids while you both eat. Build bridges of connection. Can you imagine the example that would be to them? That they matter in a world that will constantly tell them that they don't? Leave space for dinners around the sticky table left over from the art projects. Leave space for car rides. Leave space for outside time. Leave space for explore time. Leave space to prioritize people and not just special projects. Let's stop making excuses about the way things are and begin to leverage the way things are as an opportunity. Take the opportunity to pause, connect, and listen, to get to know someone for who they are, not who you think they are. Which brings me to our second insight on cultivating connection, and it's this. Perspective is the window to understanding. There are two things that struck me the most about this passage as I kept reading it and looking at it from the different angles. Jethro does two things that I believe are absolute gold in our current reality, and I think actually plays a key role as to why Moses listens to all of the advice Jethro offered later on. Look again at verse 13 and 14 with me. The next day, Moses sat to judge the people, and the people stood around Moses from morning till evening. When Moses' father-in-law saw all that he was doing for the people, he said, "What is this that you are doing for the people? Why do you sit alone and all the people stand around you from morning till evening?" Did you catch that? Before Jethro lays out his advice, he spends an extended period of time, morning till evening to be exact, simply observing. He watches. He listens. He takes the wide-scale lens of all that Moses was doing, essentially a day in the life of an all-access pass in a big Moe's life. And then Jethro finally gives Moses the advice, right? Wrong. Jethro then takes it a step further and asks a clarifying question to gather further understanding before giving an opinion. Ladies and gentlemen, that is called gaining the appropriate perspective. Jethro listens to hear first and then speaks. It's like that old adage, you've got two ears and one mouth, which means you should listen twice as often as you speak. You know, not too long ago, I recently heard an interview with Chris Voss, as a former CIA hostage and negotiator, say that that statement is actually not completely accurate. He says that when you're actively listening, it's more like a 5-to-1 ratio. Two ears to hear, two eyes to see, and the overall sense to feel. Yeah, that one was pretty convicting for me too. And I love the fact that Jethro modeled that for us. I mean, think back to all the foot-in-your-mouth moments you've had. What are some of the very first words you typically say to that person? Well, I thought, or man, I'm sorry, I just assumed you were, you know what you're declaring? I didn't look at it other than through my eyes only. And that is the exact formula we, especially as imitators of Christ, should take and apply to all of our relationships. So when you see a post on social media from one of your friends, yeah, you know, the ones that you accepted, that leans this way or that, instead of stripping them down in front of all to see, be a Jethro. Give them the benefit of the doubt. Understand the role physical presence and body language plays. And what not having those extra pieces of information in our digital exchanges does in limiting our understanding. Or when your spouse does something or says something that causes you to construct a certain narrative in your head, be a Jethro, peer through their perspective. Or when your friend hasn't called for a while and puts something online that you think refers to you, instead of making up this entire story of yourself surrounding the why, be a Jethro, pick up the phone. Or when your kids spout off in anger over something that seems so small and trivial to you, be a Jethro. Can you imagine what this time is like for them? I mean, if you're struggling with this reality, just think how much more magnified it is for them, ones who don't have the coping skills developed yet. So the next time the siloed narrative inside your head begins, take the time to peer through the window of someone else's perspective. It's what Jethro did. He asked Moses, "Why are you doing this alone?" And only after he listens to Moses' response, Jethro offers his perspective, but he shapes it in a way of showing concern for Moses and those he is leading, saying, "What you are doing is not good, Moses. You and the people with you will certainly wear yourselves out, for the thing is too heavy for you." Jethro is saying, "Moses, the RPMs of your life are way too high, bro. You're going to burn up and flame out. You're not able to do it alone," which leads us to our third insight. Life isn't meant to be lived like it's a table for one. You know, early in my career as a clinician and then during my time as a professor, I saw the importance of finding a mentor, someone who could speak into my life, guide me, pull me by these big ears of mine when I got off track, and be that trusted source of wisdom, mainly because so many of my colleagues were just smarter and wiser than I was. It's also why I was so drawn to researching the idea of mentoring during the pursuit of my PhD, because of the soul-satisfying benefits I experienced from my own personal mentoring relationships. And you know what I found? That deep down, we all crave to have someone who can pour into us. But most often, we are just too afraid or too busy to ask. That the successful ones are built on trust that is cultivated through the investment of time in getting to understand one another's story. And that the results of those mentoring relationships invested in brought forth such rich personal growth, not just for one, but for both of them. And it's what we see here with Moses and Jethro. To have that someone, that Jethro who can speak into your life with love and wisdom, to be poured into like Moses. And as a result of it, it provided Moses the framework, and he was able to model that behavior, to copy it, and then pour into others. I wonder who your Jethro is. I wonder who your Moses is. You see, I truly believe that we should both have a Jethro and pour into a Moses. What a difference this world would be if we invested in relationships like that and stopped living as if this world were meant to be lived solely as a table for one, stuffing ourselves with ourselves and giving our relationships what is left over. Gang, our relationships don't deserve our scraps. And it's time to take responsibility for the relationships we are in, because the health of our relationships are nourished by what we give them. So let's start giving them our best. It's why the title of this sermon is Time Well Spent. Because when souls pause and connect, it's time well spent. When you go the extra distance to gather perspective to understand someone a little more, it's time well spent. And when you come to realize that life is meant for more than just a table for one, it will be time well spent. And listen, I think we all need to heed Jethro's advice he gives Moses. We're not meant to stand alone. We need relationships with others and the nourishment they bring to the soul. And so what would that look like for you? How can you cultivate connection this month? For some of you, that might mean taking a step and asking someone to be your Jethro. Or some, it might mean finding your Moses. For many of you, you know it's time, long overdue time, to join a life group. There is no reason to stay isolated and disconnected any longer. It's time to invest in your soul in a way that you have been feeling God tug on you for some time now. It's time to join a digital life group where you can be your most real and authentic self, where you can be encouraged and not judged, where you can learn the scriptures, where you can have a brotherhood and a sisterhood to walk out your faith. Gang, no more excuses. No more saying it's just not the right time. Seriously, if now isn't the right time, when we are so desperate for connection, when will it ever be? And lastly, for those of you who don't have a personal relationship with Jesus, I'm sure you've heard of him. Maybe you've checked him out once or twice before, but nothing stuck. Or maybe you might be the one who dismissed him long ago. Maybe you're the one who has peeked in and tried to get a glimpse without being seen yourself. I promise you this, he sees you. And he's been trying to get your attention. Why else would you be watching this right now? You see, there is nothing more than Jesus wants you to know and to see in this moment that he desires a relationship, a connection with you. And you've been going about this life feeding your soul the scraps that this world offers you, consistently unable to fill the void you've always noticed was there. I'm here to tell you that you have been starving your soul from the very thing it was created for, what it needs most, a relationship with God the Father. It's what Jethro came to realize during his reunion with Moses. You know, the one thing I failed to mention until now is the fact that Jethro was a chief priest of a pagan religion up to the point of this story. And because of what he had heard with his ears, saw with his eyes, and felt with his soul, he could no longer deny the fact that God was who Moses claimed him to be. And as we saw in verse 11, Jethro proclaims that God was the God above all other gods, and he sacrificed and gave his life to him. And the same God we read of in this story is the same God that actually sent his son Jesus into this world to take on human nature, to suffer, die on a cross for our sins, rise from the dead. And do you want to know why? Because God wanted to restore and redeem his relationship with you. Wow. Oh, weary soul, this moment is for you to connect to the limitless God and be restored to him once and for all. You know, Romans 10, verse 9 says that if you confess your mouth the Lord Jesus and believe in your heart that God has raised him from the dead, you will be saved. It's time to invest in your soul. So here's what I'm asking you to do today by the way of a next step. Would you take out your phone and text the word grace next to 94090? And when you receive a text back, you'll have a choice. If today is the day you want to begin a soul-satisfying connection with Jesus and follow him for the first time, choose choice one. I want to follow Jesus. He cannot wait to begin his relationship with you. And if you'd like more information about a digital life group, choose the second option, and we will do what we can, and we get you where you need to be in order to make that happen. And finally, all this month, to go along with our series, we have resources available to you at whoisgrace.com/reconnected. There are links to videos, articles, devotionals, and ways to be creative and foster deeper connection with those of you who have relationships in life. It's time to fill ourselves with what matters most, gang. Trust me when I say that it will be time well spent.